Today, House Speaker Paul Ryan says he has questions after NPR revealed that while in the Air Force, the church shooter in Texas was court-martialed and imprisoned for assaulting his wife and fracturing his infant stepson's skull.
We have laws in the books that says if you're a domestic abuser, you're not supposed to own a gun. He was a domestic abuser. That's why we got all these questions with the Air Force right now, which is how did this get slipped through the cracks?
Well, for one thing, the domestic assault in 2012 was not communicated by the Air Force to the system of background checks that would have prevented him from buying his guns, the assault-style rifle and two guns he used in the attack. NPR's Camila Domonoske has been following this story. And Camila, you say the information that the Air Force had was not uploaded into the federal crime database. Is that how it works? It's automatic? Tell us more.
It's not an automatic system. At some point, you do have a person who needs to put this information into the database that the FBI has available for this purpose. And in this case, the shooter's conviction, his court-martial, disqualified him from gun ownership for two separate reasons. First of all, the crime of assault that he was convicted of, it was punishable by up to 5 years of confinement, the military equivalent of jail time. And he was only actually sentenced to 1 year, but the fact that it was punishable by 5 years meant that it qualified. It should have made him not eligible for gun ownership or gun possession. And the second reason is that the nature of his crime was domestic violence. He fractured his stepson's skull and assaulted his then wife. Based on those two reasons, this actually should have gone into the system both before his conviction, when there was probable cause that he committed these crimes, and after he was actually convicted. But it never went in.
And it's being called a clerical problem that it didn't go into the system. But you say even if it had gone in, been uploaded, there's this language problem between the military and civilian systems. If the military had called it, as the military does, assault instead of domestic violence, it might not have triggered that part of the law. And if it had only said a year, because he plea bargained down to a year, the language of the law, as we understand it, the civilian law, says a crime punishable by imprisonment for more than 1 year. So if they didn't know it was plea bargained down from 5 to 1, that wouldn't have been caught either.
Yeah, I spoke with the former chief prosecutor for the Air Force who was there at the time that this court-martial happened, and he said that it is very possible for things to be lost in translation between the military and the civilian judicial systems just because they have different terminologies, and that's even when the military is sharing information. And again, what appears to have happened here was an error at this Air Force base in New Mexico where the information was never input at all. And I should say the Air Force said last night they're conducting an internal review of what happened here and of other similar cases to determine if there's more information that should have been passed along. And the Pentagon is looking at other branches of the military as well.
Well, New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand tweeted out, "No excuse for this. I'm calling on the Department of Defense to audit old case files to prevent this deadly error from happening again." But one wonders, I mean, what can they do? Can they go then trace people who should have had this kind of language uploaded and maybe didn't and take weapons away? It seems kind of unwieldy. So what is the military saying they'll do if they find that this has happened before?
At this point, they're focusing on the fact that they are launching an investigation, that they're trying to evaluate the scope of the problem. And I will say we do have some information that there might be other cases that would fall under the similar situation as this one. We don't know for sure. Again, an investigation has been launched. It's ongoing. But we do know that currently the vast majority of the instances that the military does report into this database as flagging someone as ineligible for gun ownership is based on whether or not they got a dishonorable discharge, which is not the same as what happened in this case.
Well, yeah, tell us about that, because, again, in the civilian law, a dishonorable discharge prohibits someone from buying a gun. A bad conduct discharge doesn't. This shooter got a bad conduct discharge. What's the difference, and why isn't it dishonorable to fracture a child's skull?
Well, they're both punitive discharges from the military that are only in response to someone being convicted of having done something wrong in the eyes of the military, which can include a number of different things. In the case of a dishonorable discharge, that's for extremely egregious behavior as determined by the court-martial members, sort of like a jury. Based on the shooter's crimes here, he would have been eligible for being punished with a dishonorable discharge, but the group of people who are making the decision opted to give him a bad conduct discharge. That means that based on the nature of his discharge, he's not inherently banned from owning a gun, but again, the nature of the crime for which he was convicted, that got him.
Camila Domonoske, NPR reporter, thank you.
Thanks, Robin.